Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. The recent South Dakota legislative session saw several bills that garnered much discussion. One of them was HB 1107, designed to ensure government non-discrimination in matters of religious beliefs and moral conviction. That bill did not pass. In the state of Mississippi, however, Governor Phil Bryant signed a bill into law this week known as the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act. Some are hailing the courage of Governor Bryant. Others are calling the bill legalized discrimination. Today, we're going to have a thoughtful conversation about deeply held religious beliefs. We're joined now by Dr. Richard Swanson. He's professor of religion at Augustana University. We've also got Dr. Dave O'Hara. He's chair of the religion department at Augie and a professor of philosophy and classics. Dr. Swanson, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Dr. O'Hara, welcome as well.
Thanks, Lori. It's nice to be with you.
So I want to start with this idea of deeply held religious beliefs or sincerely held religious beliefs. This seems to be an important phrase. It comes up again and again when people talk about this kind of legislation. Richard Swanson, do you want to start with what is a deeply held religious belief? Why is it important to call it that?
Well, it isn't quite clear to me why that particular wording is so very important. But there is in American religion the belief that sincerity amounts to truth. And so if people hold a belief sincerely, that's probably some sort of test of truth. But that's an unreliable test for truth because people hold all sorts of sincere beliefs that are simply wrong. But it's probably here rooted in the notion that somehow or other, something that a person holds deeply ought not be questioned.
Dr. O'Hara, do deeply held beliefs or sincerely held beliefs change for someone who is faithful? Do they evolve over a lifetime of being a person of faith?
Well, I think if they didn't change, that would mean that there was something divine about them. You know, if we have beliefs that we think that can't be corrected any further, then we've probably mistaken those beliefs for God. There are some deeply held religious beliefs that I think have shaped our country. You look at the Declaration of Independence, and you see four different times in the Declaration there's a mention of the divine. You know, God is nature's God, the creator, the judge, the divine providence. And, there's obviously, this is important for us as a country, but I think if we were to write the Declaration of Independence today, we probably would use different language. The ideas do change over time.
Dr. Swanson, how challenging is it to live as a person of faith in a society where you look around and maybe some things are happening that are opposite of what you believe?
I think that's challenging for anyone who is a public citizen. Mm-hmm. It would be a rare thing to live in a community where you did not disagree with some of the things that the society as a whole held or did or committed you to. There are challenges to people of faith, but there are challenges that simply, I think they're the same challenges that go with living in civil society, which always requires some level of compromise and some level of cooperation.
The notion of keeping the federal government from sort of restricting First Amendment freedom of religion is not new. Who wants to talk a little bit about how this compares to history as we talk about protecting freedom of religion right now? Dave O'Hara, you want to tackle that first?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the things that comes immediately to mind for me, Lori, Dr. Swanson and I both teach at a church-related college. We're both Christians, and, you know, we're both familiar with the history of Christianity. We're aware of the fact that you get five books into the New Testament, and you've got Christians who are grappling with change in culture. You know, here they are. Many of them were Jews who then affirmed faith in Jesus as the Messiah, and now they run into Greeks who are not Jews who become also people who believe in Jesus as the Messiah, and they got to figure out how do we conduct ourselves? How do we live together in a community? And what are the sort of rules and regulations that we have? The history of Christianity is, from its start, from its Jewish roots, the history of people grappling together with what does it mean to believe in God and what does it mean for us in the way that we relate to one another. Jesus said something I think that's really helpful for us, even though it's very challenging, and he said it all boils down to two things. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Richard Swanson, you want to add to that? That sort of train of thought? Go ahead.
Yeah, coming from another angle to the same point. One of the things that seems important to me out of the history of the American experiment is the deeply held notion that while religion is clearly part of American life, it is there ought to be freedom of religion and from religion. So you can get an argument over that notion anywhere you go, but in fact, it was a deeply held important notion on the part of the framers of this experiment that there ought not be that American life ought not be governed by religious authority that speaks with an absolute voice. And so the notion of how you live together, given the very real differences, especially in matters of religion, is part of the deep DNA of the American experiment. The as a Christian finding myself in the midst of that wrangle, there will always have been places where I would love to have imposed other actions on the nation as a whole, but the option that is left to us is the making of good arguments and the convincing of rational people that other courses of action are wiser than the ones that we've taken. That probably, since Dr. O'Hara quoted from the New Testament, I'll quote from the prophet Micah, that's probably where people of faith have to learn to walk humbly with their God, because we have to walk also humbly with each other.
Many of these conversations are starting because of the legalization of gay marriage, and so that issue seems to be central to many of the conversations this year. I'm wondering what sort of conversations Christians are having, and obviously you see Christians, that's a broad, what kind of conversations are you having with fellow Christians about gay marriage, and where do you begin to have those conversations? What's your responsibility as you wade into them as people of faith? Dr. Hare, you want to start there?
Yeah, sure. So I often wind up teaching classes that where we've got where Scripture plays an important role. And one of the stories that comes back to mind for me again and again is a story that Jesus told in Luke's Gospel, in the 15th chapter. He tells a story of a young man who says to his father, I want to go and live my life in a way that you'll disagree with, and I want you to pay for it. And the father, in this story, in this parable, reflects what God is like to us. And the father's response, rather than being, no, I'm going to set up a rule that says that you can't do that, the father says, okay, you have the freedom to do that. And he lets him do it. And when the son goes and lives that way, he winds up changing his mind and coming back to the father, and the father welcomes him back warmly. When I think about, and when, you know, when we talk about this in our classes, when we talk about this with friends and colleagues, we often find ourselves reminding ourselves that it doesn't seem like Jesus came in order to set up a new kind of human kingdom, but a different kind of kingdom in which probably the biggest threat to my happy marriage is coming from me, not from people outside of my marriage. Mm. And that the most important thing that I can do is to love my wife and to help other people as they engage in the loves that they feel called to.
Do students, Dr. Swanson, at Augustana struggle and wrestle with these kind of issues? What's the current generation sort of bringing into the classroom in a topic like gay marriage?
When I began teaching at Augustana, now 26 years ago, students did not particularly struggle, but in the main held a position that was in the main largely opposed to gay marriage and uneasy with gay people, for instance, as pastors, other such things. About 10 years ago, it seemed to me that was changing. And even some of my very conservative students, and we get very liberal and very conservative students and everyone of every sort at Augustana, even some of my very conservative students about 10 years ago started realizing that that was not an issue for them as it had been for earlier generations of students. So that I find amongst our students a broader acceptance of gay marriage, of gay pastors, of gay friends than I used to find. Oddly, that happened at about the same time that my father-in-law found himself thinking the same thing. Also had been a very conservative man, and he realized that he had always known that one of his best buddies from the Navy was in fact gay, and he realized, he told me, that he had always realized that and he had never cared. It seemed to be happening in both the parental generation and in the generation of our students at about the same time.
So when you hear about conversations in the legislature, which surely will be back next year, and they sort of put religious freedom in the text of the legislation and wrestle with those ideas, do you have certain thoughts about legislation and religious freedom, David?
Well, again, I don't feel particularly threatened right now. I'm not sure that I can think of any laws offhand that would threaten my ability to practice my religion, since my religion mostly involves being willing to confront my God and let my God confront me, being willing to pray and to let God challenge me through the scriptures and through the community of faith. I am concerned that, you know, that we not impede other people's religious growth and freedom. There's an ancient philosopher by the name of Chrysippus who said there's a really good reason to believe in God. Even if you don't, if you can't prove that God exists, there's a good reason to believe in God, and that is that as long as you believe that there's some God up there, you'll never make the mistake of thinking that you're that God. So when I think about writing laws about religion, I think the one thing that matters to me most is that we make sure that when we write those laws, we don't pretend that we are God. And that is to say that we don't pretend that we've got the right to take away rights from other people. Does that make sense?
Richard, you want to add to that?
I like that very well, and that well said. It's from the angle that I approach these matters, it seems to me that introducing religion into this discussion, introducing the notion of religious freedom into the discussion, skews the discussion in a way that is unhelpful, because it uses religion instrumentally to make a political argument that is in fact that ought to have to stand on its own but does not. The same religious freedom argument could have been mounted in the days of segregation, because people had strong religious objections to integrating society. I think that parallel is important. People had strong religious objections to paying taxes to support the Vietnam War, and those arguments from either side were not allowed in those days and ought not be allowed now. I think religion is a distraction in this discussion.
Do Christians have a responsibility to be part of the conversation, Dave?
Yeah, I think that we do. There's a call from as early as the time of Jesus that we are to share the good news, that we are to be evangelists in some sense of that word. But I think that we have to remember that evangelism means exposing the gospel, not imposing the gospel. You know, that our responsibility is to remind our neighbors that there is good news, that God offers us grace and love and forgiveness. Not so much that God has come here to point a finger at us and say, you're all naughty and here are the laws that I want you to impose upon one another so that you don't, you know, do these four or five things that you ought not to do. All the things that we do are going to wind up, we're going to wind up messing up. Think about what it's like to be a teenager and think, you know, when you look at your parents when you're a teenager, you think, man, when I'm a parent, I'm not going to do all those things that they did wrong. And then you become a parent and you discover, actually, no matter how wonderful my love for my children is, I'm going to screw it up somehow. And we do wind up doing that.
Yeah, sorry about that, Mom. I'll just throw that
out. Exactly,
shout out to
right?
Mom. Yeah.
It's good just to offer grace to one another and the ability to say, I'm sorry, I messed up, I'd like to try again, and to welcome one another back. And laws that run the risk of making it impossible for people to say, I'm sorry, and make it impossible for people to feel a part of the community, that's dangerous. We got to remember, Jesus himself was a refugee and an outsider, And throughout the scriptures, we've got examples again and again of people who are outsiders in one way or another, and that God welcomes them in and shows them grace and love and mercy.
Dr. Swanson, any last words on this that you want to add before we go?
Only that it seems to me that the American experiment requires us to find a way always to let every citizen in, not freeze citizens out. And as a Christian, the notion that faith would be used as a tool to freeze people out of citizenship seems to me simply wrong, both theologically and politically.
You've been listening to Dr. Richard Swanson. He's professor of religion at Augustana University. Thank you, Dr. Swanson, for joining us today.
Thank you for asking.
Dr. Dave O'Hara, any last words that you wanted to add before we let you go?
Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. That's what Dr. Swanson said before, Micah 6:8.
Dave O'Hara is chair of the religion department at Augustana. He's a professor of philosophy and classics. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thanks for having us, Lori. I appreciate it.